Hello, and welcome to the Business Decisions Podcast. My name is Stuart Wood, and I'm the CEO of Caravel Law. Every week, we bring you stories and insights from founders, owners, and leaders of great businesses, followed by some thoughts and input from one of Caravel's lawyers. Caravel Law has been a leader in legal innovation in Canada since 2004 and has helped many startups and small businesses overcome challenges as they have scaled and succeeded. Our hope is that these discussions will help existing business leaders and inspire others to start their own ventures. Now, let's get to today's guest. I'm delighted to be joined on the podcast today by Ali Compo. Ali is currently with Flip, but she was also the founder of Woof Signs, a startup that she led from 2017 through 2018. Ali was kind enough to join us to talk about her journey with Woof Signs, and in particular, making the tough decision to shut that business down. Our firm, Caravel Law, purchased a sign from Woof Signs, and we thought it was a great user experience along with a great finished product, so I was curious to hear what happened. Ali shares her thinking along the way and what was involved in shutting down the business. It's part of the startup journey that isn't talked about as much, so hopefully it's helpful to some entrepreneurs who may be faced with the same difficult decision. And there's even a special appearance from Ali's dog, Frankie. After my conversation with Ali, I'm joined by Randy Witten, a corporate and commercial lawyer with Caravel Law. Randy and I talk about what's involved in shutting down a business, some key things that a founder needs to keep in mind, and what to look for in contracts and agreements that could have an impact on your responsibilities. This is always going to be a tough time for a founder when you're shutting down a business, so hopefully this podcast has some helpful information for people. And with that, here's my conversation with Ali Compo. All right, I'm delighted to be joined on the podcast today by Ali Compo. She is currently a partner relationship manager at Flip, which is certainly a very exciting company based in Toronto, and has worked on a number of startups over her career, including founding a company in 2017 called Woof Signs. And I would like to talk to Ali about that today, as she had to make the decision in 2018 to shut that company down, but had a really interesting story and would love to hear more about it. So Ali, welcome to the podcast.
Awesome. Thanks for having me, Stuart.
So tell us a little bit about Woof Signs, how it got started, and where the idea came from.
Yeah. So in terms of starting up Woof Signs, it actually came from an idea that my brother and I had together. So he has a design and manufacturing firm that he owns with his partner in Toronto. And they get all kinds of different inquiries for them to make custom goods for their clients. And one of the things that they continuously got requests for was signage. And many of the times that they were getting these signage requests, it was all kind of using similar manufacturing techniques and similar products to actually make the signage. And so we kind of saw this opportunity to see if we could productize signage and try to sell it online. So instead of, you know, connecting with a customer on the phone or face to face and doing a lot of custom work, could we kind of define a product set, bring that online, have customers actually design it online and complete the transaction online and drive the business in that manner so that it could be much more efficient and streamlined.
And so printing like this is a family business.
Yes, it is. And actually, it's funny because my dad also worked in like the paper print industry and was in sales in that industry through his career. So it's kind of funny how that has trickled down to myself and my brother.
And so how did you end up starting the business as opposed to your brother?
So, I mean, my brother and his partner today have a very successful business together that's kind of already has legs and is moving very quickly. And I was at the point in my career where I always kind of wondered about starting my own business, thought it could be an interesting opportunity. I didn't necessarily have one specific industry or vertical that I really wanted to go in. And so when my brother and I were talking one day and he kind of talked about this opportunity, to me, it sounded interesting because there was already an existing consumer set that we had data on. We knew that people were reaching out to their company and saying, hey, we want this product. And there was potentially an opportunity to see if there was product market fit to actually bring that type of product online, make it a lot more efficient, make it a lot more hopefully lucrative kind of in the end. And so to me, it seemed like a great idea as an opportunity to start my own business because there was a little bit that was already there and I wouldn't necessarily completely start from scratch.
And where did the name come from, Wolf Signs?
Thinking back, I think that there were quite a few different names that we thought about. And just kind of thinking about the marketing and the SEO strategy, we definitely knew that Signs needed to be in the title for sure. And then I kind of was thinking of other brands that I kind of wanted to emulate. And I actually looked at the company Moo. So they do customized printing and business cards and things like that. And I particularly enjoy dogs. So that's kind of how the name came together.
You did work out all the technology and had the site up and running. It was a beautiful site. And I should disclose that Caravelle Law purchased a sign from Wolf Signs, which was beautiful and we love.
Thank you.
How long into the journey did you realize that this might not be a business that had legs that you could see building in the long run?
So I think that the approach that we took initially was how can we get an MVP up and running? And so I think that the MVP for me meant having a site that consumers could go on that had products that they could actually purchase. And that the site would kind of enable some level of customization that they could do directly online. The other piece of the MVP is we'd obviously have to get customers to the site. And I think that in determining like the product market fit, we had to decide like if we got the customers to the site, would they then transact? And so in terms of getting customers to the site, I worked a lot and learned a ton about SEO through the time, and I got a decent amount of traffic through that. I also paid for some ads and then did some direct kind of cold outreach as well. And so that piece of the strategy probably took me, I would say, at least 6 months to get a good cadence of customers and a good cadence of customer feedback. And what I started to realize is that if you think of Vistaprint, the pricing that they have for like their business cards is quite low. And so if you go online, you customize a business card, you get it in the mail, you don't like it, it's not a big deal. It was $10, right? You can just kind of go to a different company or like buy something different through Vistaprint. It's not that cost prohibitive. When you look at signage though, you're getting into the hundreds of dollars. And so what we found is that the customer expectation for that price point was that they would have direct kind of communication with the person who was designing the sign. We had some, you know, general products online that the customers could purchase, but they wanted something that was a little bit different. So that they wanted something that was further customized versus what was offered online. And so it, I would say like 6 to 8 months in, it became apparent to me that if we truly wanted this to be an online product, the price point and the expectation of the customer didn't necessarily align for it to be kind of a fully automated online business. And so that's where I kind of came to the point where I had to decide, okay, do I want to pivot the product? And so is there a way that we could provide a product at a lower price point that consumers might have a greater appetite to purchase online? Or, you know, do I want to go into the business of doing custom signage and have more of like, let's call it a local small business where I'd be willing to kind of consult with the customer to give them a very custom product in the end.
Were you working on this business by yourself at this point?
Yeah. So I was primarily working on the business by myself. So I obviously leveraged my brother's company to do the manufacturing. He was also an investor in the company. And so he consulted on the business as well. But in terms of like getting the work done, it was just myself during the time that we were in operation.
And so as you were thinking through, did you have, obviously your brother, but were there other people who were able to sort of talk through these issues with you and explore different opportunities or things you might try to see if you could pivot the business?
Yeah. So I think that one of the biggest things that was helpful for me earlier on is I tried to get out and market and get a lot of feedback from who would be the end users. And so I met with a bunch of different small and medium-sized businesses who would probably kind of procure signage on their own. They probably didn't want to pay a lot of money for it, and talk to them about what this type of business could provide. And I think that that's kind of where some of the earlier feedback came from is the people that I was talking to said like, hey, like this is something that I would want. The price point is appealing, but for me, I would need to kind of like touch and feel the materials before purchasing, or I would want this type of sign, but something a little bit different. So I'd want to make sure that there was like some sort of consulting involved and things like that. So I kind of leaned on the end user to give me a lot of feedback on the specific product.
Once you realized that you had these challenges, how long between when you realized that there were some obstacles and maybe some things that were preventing you from getting product market fit before you made the decision to shut down the business?
So I think that, I guess thinking back to it, I probably, in hindsight, I think I knew that the online model in the way that we had it set up probably wasn't viable like at that 6 month point. But I think in probably most cases of people that you'll talk to that shut down a business, I let it go longer than it should have. I think I still, you know, the business was up and running for about a year and a half. And so it wasn't that much longer. But I think that the challenging piece was figuring out, or I guess coming to terms with like, you know, this isn't going to work in the way that I hoped it would. And, you know, reconciling that. And then also deciding like, what do I want to do from here? Like, do I want to pivot, like I mentioned, or do I want to continue the business in a different way? And I mean, ultimately, I decided to shut down the business for kind of, I guess, like business and financial reasons. So for me, I realized, you know, the online business isn't going to work. Personally, I didn't want to just kind of have a small custom local signage business. That wasn't something I was really interested in. And then I also, at the time, got a great offer from the company that I'm back with now. I actually worked with them before I started the business as well. And so kind of like financially, that made a lot of sense to me also.
Did you explore whether anybody would be interested in buying the company or running it for you?
I didn't consider that only because I didn't think that it was out of, like, someone would basically have to take the company and pivot it in some manner. And so what I really considered was just passing the site back to my brother because they could still use that site as an acquisition channel. And so that kind of made the most sense for us because it was still, you know, a good influx of a client base for them that they could potentially leverage.
How did you actually make the decision? You said it ran for about a year and a half. How did you make the decision to actually, today's the day, turning off the site?
So there were kind of a lot of discussions between myself and my brother in terms of next steps. It probably took us about 3 weeks to say, okay, we're going to kind of like part ways on this and not proceed. And then at that point I said, you know, like this has been my thing that I've been working on. So I'll kind of own winding down the business and kind of passing off the pieces to him that he still wanted to keep. And so that decision, I guess, and discussion kind of took about 3 weeks, like I said. And then from there, it was just kind of working out all of the logistics of what winding down the business actually entailed.
And how difficult was it to actually formally shut down the business?
It was fairly difficult. I think that
there's a woof.
Yeah, woof. One sec, sorry.
What's your dog's name?
My dog's name is Frankie.
You obviously could tell we were talking about woof signs.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, so I think that it was reasonably challenging. I think that because it was more of an online business, like we didn't have physical assets, we didn't have an office space and things like that, like I was working out of my home, that probably made it a little bit easier in terms of winding down. So from a winding down perspective, really what I needed to sort out was more from a legal side and an accounting side and like taxes and things like that. So the first piece from a legal perspective, we had from the outset incorporated the company. And so I needed to dissolve the corporation. And so for that, we had a lawyer that I worked with here in Waterloo that incorporated the company that kind of helped me from that perspective. It was definitely quite expensive, like just incorporating the company from the outset, as well as even just like filing the papers to dissolve the corporation. And then from an accounting perspective, I think like one of my big learnings in terms of dissolving the corporation was the time at which you dissolve the incorporation is important, because at the end of the day, even if you've dissolved the corporation, like you still have to file all of your taxes and forms at year end. And so I dissolved the corporation just slightly late. And so I had to pay the accountant to file like taxes and everything for another year. If you're able to wrap everything up prior to the year end, then you kind of save yourself another tax cycle.
So when you had to wrap things up, the fact that you didn't have any other employees and you didn't have an office lease, had you taken on any outside money? Did you have any investors or anything like that?
So my brother was an investor in the company. Again, I think, you know, given that he's my brother and our relationship and him wanting to kind of take on just a couple pieces of the business, we were kind of just able to negotiate what that would look like between ourselves. And that was fairly seamless. So the only thing that I had to do was through the lawyer is just update our like meeting notes and things like that in the articles of incorporation. And then just go through the paperwork in terms of like dissolving the corporation.
And so you and your brother haven't ended up in court fighting this out for years?
We have not. And our relationship is still intact, probably even better.
Oh, that's good.
Yeah.
And how did you manage communicating to the outside world that you had shut down Woof Signs?
That actually, I would say, like, wasn't as difficult as I had expected. So we did wrap up any of the existing business that we had. So we still delivered any kind of final products to the customers that we had. And then I just, like, if there were any reoccurring customers that I had, I just communicated to them that if they wanted anything going forward, like if they wanted anything custom, they could potentially reach out to my brother's company for a quote. And we did keep the website up and running just to continue to funnel any additional leads through his company for a period of time if needed. So I didn't necessarily have to do any kind of wide format communication. It was more kind of personally, people saying like, hey, what are you doing now? Why did you wind down the business? And I don't know, I'm a pretty open and honest person. So just kind of never hesitated to talk through like the trials and tribulations of owning a business. I was also lucky that, you know, I already had another opportunity that I had secured that I was going into. So it was just kind of managing that piece of the communication.
Did you find it difficult to tell your friends and family that you were shutting down the business?
I actually didn't. And I think that one of the reasons why I didn't is because as I was operating the business, I never shied away from giving people kind of the real and, you know, talking about the challenges that I was going through. And I think that that's one thing that helped me make the decision in a reasonably quick manner and kind of not let things drag on for years and years. Is because I was constantly like communicating with my friends and family and like letting them know, hey, like this is working, this isn't really working, and like getting their feedback and reassurance or validation that like, yeah, like that probably isn't working actually kind of helped me make that decision. And then in the end, when I communicated to them that I was moving on to a different opportunity, it wasn't necessarily a surprise.
Now that it's been a little bit of time since you closed down Woof Signs, what kind of lessons do you think you learned from the experience?
The biggest lesson I likely learned and what I would do differently next time is basically the decision around what type of business I would get into and how I would approach that. So I think the goal here was to create an online business. And I think that doing something that involves some level of customization was probably the hardest way to approach growing an online business. So as I went through, you know, growing on the marketing side and learning a lot more about SEO, you know, I think that the approach I would take is, hey, find a very like simple, easy product that customers are interested in. And you can, you know, find that through tons of search data and try to sell that product where there's no customization involved. It's at like a reasonable price point that customers know exactly what they're getting and sell as much as you possibly can. That's what I would probably do next time. And then I think that from the outset, the way in which we set up the company was probably the most expensive way that you could go about it. And so working with a traditional lawyer and incorporating from day one without knowing like how long the business was going to be in order, that cost thousands of dollars. And so I likely would not take that same approach next time. And I probably wouldn't incorporate or involve like that level of legal advice until I had a good feeling that the business was going to sustain itself for at least quite a few years.
And so now you have a great role at a very exciting company in Flip. Mm-hmm. Do you think you might do another startup again in the future?
I would never say never. So I think that I would potentially do something in the future. I think that right now, like I'm very happy in my career and in the role that I'm in. Like I really enjoy the work that I do. I think that also, you know, working for another company that is like a mid-sized startup, you do kind of get, you know, you get the excitement, like you kind of like get to ride the roller coaster, which is fun and stressful at times, but you also have the stability of, you know, getting a paycheck biweekly. And so I think for now, I'm very happy where I am, but I think in future, like I definitely would potentially take another stab at it.
I know there's a ton of work that goes into starting up a company, and it's a tough decision to shut it down. And I really appreciate you taking the time today to tell us a little bit about that journey and some of the things that were involved. And I think it might be really helpful for a lot of people who might be feeling a bit stuck or not sure what to do. And so I really appreciate you taking the time to tell us about it.
Of course. Thanks, Stuart.
Thank you very much, Allie. Really enjoyed that conversation with Allie, and especially happy that Frankie was able to contribute to the discussion. Now here's my discussion with Randy Whitten from Caravel Law. All right, I'm delighted to be joined on the podcast now by Randy Whitten. Randy is a corporate and commercial lawyer with Caravel Law. Randy, why don't you tell us a little bit about your practice?
Sure, Stuart. I guess I'd say there are different ways to describe my practice, but the simplest is really it's business law. So that includes a lot of general contract work, such as commercial leasing and technology. Also mergers and acquisitions, which in simpler terms is buying and selling a business. And general corporate law, which can range from setting up and maintaining corporations to shareholders agreements.
Great. Well, I think you're the perfect guest then. We just heard a story about a person who made the decision to shut down her business. And she described it as taking longer and costing more than she expected to actually shut down the business. And this was a pretty straightforward situation where she had no office, so there was no lease, and she had no employees, so no employment contracts to deal with. And it still ended up taking longer and costing more than she expected. So what are some of the things that owners need to keep in mind if they are facing the prospect of shutting down a business versus potentially pushing it ahead as far as they can until there's literally no money left?
I'd say the first thing they need to think about is really what unfulfilled commitments are remaining. Could be things like bank loans that are still outstanding, taxes owed, and contractual obligations that are still in play. There's also the possibility that if the business is operated through a corporation, the owner would have to go through a corporate dissolution. And that involves also updating all public filings related to the corporation and registrations, such as there may be a business name that the owner is using that's different than the corporate name. And then I think of things like closing accounts. There are bank accounts, credit cards, various utilities. There are also software licenses, which kind of comes back to the unfulfilled commitment category a bit. Domain name registrations. And perhaps memberships and associations that have to be addressed as well.
So in this case, she didn't have an office lease, but I know that's one of the main focuses for people when they're deciding to shut down a business. What are some of the things an owner needs to be mindful of if they are shutting down with regards to their office lease?
The first thing that comes to mind, Stuart, is a personal guarantee, especially for small businesses. Landlords will require that somebody entering into a lease through a corporation would have to give a personal guarantee. So it's not so simple as just walking away from the lease if one is a tenant through a corporation. And then in terms of dealing with the remaining lease, the lease term, it's possible that the lease would permit the tenant to assign or sublet it to someone else. So there's often a market, depending on where we're talking about, for somebody to take over the lease in that way. And it depends on the market conditions. In that situation, you'd require the landlord consent. And then if there isn't an option to assign it or sublet, there's just nobody available, perhaps the landlord's willing to take back the lease and let the tenant off the hook, essentially. And that would be the case where the landlord has a ready market for somebody to step in. And even in an assignment or sublet scenario, a landlord may say, you know what, I'd rather deal with a new tenant directly. I don't want to have to go through you as a sub-landlord. So that may be an option.
So if you're dissolving your corporation, are you able to sublease your office space, or do you have to maintain your corporation throughout the remainder of the lease?
If the lease is continuing under the name of the corporation, it would have to stay in place till the end of the lease.
And that would mean you'd have to continue to file corporate taxes, et cetera, even though the business is not generating any income or has ongoing operations.
That's right. There'd still be tax returns and financial statements and related obligations. That's true.
Yeah. So I know each contract has its own unique terms, but what are some of the things that an owner needs to look for in those agreements if they're doing that contractual review that you suggested at the beginning? You know, if they're shutting down, or even if shutting down is becoming a possibility?
Well, some of the things that fall into the sort of the category of this question and the prior one is some additional things to look at, actually. There are often repair or restoration obligations in a lease. So the tenant may have to restore the space to the condition it was in before the tenant had its own improvements installed. Let's say if it's a specialty use, and I used to work in the broadcasting business, so often with radio stations, there are really special needs for space. The landlord would say, you've got to restore the space and take out all these special improvements that you installed. Another thing to check for is that often a tenant has to pay a security deposit up front or last month's rent. So those are two more things to look for. In terms of the other things where we're talking about the shutdown, a tenant can look first to see if there's an early termination right in the lease. So it might be that it was pre-negotiated to say, well, you know, after two-thirds of the way through the lease, I can get out as a tenant, and I've pre-negotiated that. Or the lease may say, in sort of along the same vein, that there's a pre-calculated amount set out to say if the tenant leaves early, the tenant's going to pay a certain percentage of the remaining rent. Sometimes it's calculated as a present value thing. The tenant would then have to look also for the assignment restriction. So earlier I was talking about the possibility of assigning or subletting a lease. So the lease will contain provisions about what's permitted, what isn't, where the landlord's consent is required or not, what conditions have to be met. The first one is typically that the prospective subtenant or assignee has to have a sufficient financial wherewithal to step in. The other thing I can think of is that often leases provide for what happens in the case of a tenant's insolvency or bankruptcy. And so that's something to look for as well, because it might already be addressed to say, you're shutting down your business, here's what happens.
And what about for things like technology contracts, or if you've signed up for a long-term software agreement?
The same thing applies, I guess, to see there could be a predetermined solution in case of an early termination. So it might be, again, there's a pre-calculated amount of damages to be paid if I need to get out of that contract before the end of the term.
Well, that's a lot of really helpful information. That's a very stressful time for entrepreneurs if they're having to consider shutting down their business. So I really appreciate you taking the time to explain some of this to us.
It sure is stressful. So I'm happy to be able to help, Stuart.
Thank you very much, Randy.
You're very welcome.
Okay, I want to thank my guests on the podcast this week, Ali Compo and Randy Witten. If you'd like more information about Caravel Law or this podcast, please check us out at caravellaw.com. Thanks for listening to the Business Decisions Podcast. If you enjoyed this episode, please subscribe, leave us a rating, and potentially share the podcast with someone else that you think might benefit from these conversations. We'll be back soon with another episode of the podcast. And until then, we hope all of your business decisions are great ones.